Hi, good morning, everyone. This is a new episode of Carolyn Talks. I'm your host, Carolyn Haynes, film critic and journalist, and this is the podcast slash YouTube channel where I speak to Adebukola Boudrin to talk about her film, We Are Not Alone, which is a very different film. It's a live action short film, and it uses a technology of laser etching on the actual film itself to create visual images on the screen. And it's about this young Nigerian immigrant who is searching for connection amongst the stars. When an unidentified flying object, hovering object, flying object, appears over the city. And it's interesting in regards to, like, do you want to find connection in the stars or do you want to find connection to the people that are right next to you? So I think the film is very interesting, like that, using a technology or a form of filmmaking that I haven't seen before. So thank you so much, Buki, for joining me to talk about the film. Thank you.
Hi, how's it going? Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, sure, no problem. So I was reading up a bit on you, and so like you've done like animated work before. Like I think one of the most notable pieces you've done is a short animation called Golden Chain, and I watched it on your website, and it was done in collaboration with the novelist Ezra Clayton Daniels, who also did a short novel, graphic novel that this film, We Are Not Alone, is kind of like an adaptation of. So tell me, how did you go from what made you decide to go from basically animated and different forms of art to finally making a like your first live action short film?
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, so my background is in experimental animation. I've always done a lot of handmade techniques. It's usually just called direct animation. It's when you're directly animating and manipulating film. And so I've always just worked in that medium. And Ezra, who's actually also my husband, we've been
Okay.
slowly working on more and more collaborations together. And so I just really wanted to challenge myself by making a live action short rather than a short animation. I mean, another short animation. And so we started just talking about some ideas, and he'd written this short comic called We're Not Alone, that's really about sort of the false promise of like the American dream, like this idea of like constantly striving, achieving for something that may not actually be there or worth it. And so I really was interested in that story. The original comic, I think, follows a kid who's doing all these things when he sees that an alien ship is approaching. But I wanted to explore the story from another character's perspective in this world. And so we reconceived the story to be from a recent immigrant's perspective, who's sort of experiencing isolation in her newfound country. Yeah, and then the story took many different turns. We started working on it before the pandemic, and we had like we'd probably gone through two or three versions of the script. And then, as we got closer to making it, the isolation of the pandemic was, it was insane. And so I was just like, I can't make something so hopeless because the original ending was quite bleak. And so we sort of retooled the ending to sort of have a little more hope and not be so bleak, but still keep our main themes of focusing on false promises or almost like false prophets.
Yeah, because the thing is this object that's floating, it the first thing that my mind thought of was like a Tetris block. It looks like a Tetris block, and it made me think that this thing isn't the only one of its kind, can't be, and like people believe that Earth is the only place in like the entire universe and galaxy with intelligent life. And I'm like, I've never believed that. I've always believed that we literally are not alone, we can't be. And like the vastness of everything, there's like it's impossible that we can be the only intelligent life forms. And that's going even outside of like my belief as a Christian and angels and stuff. But the film really made me think of how you can conceptualize alien beings as something apart from humanoid shape. Like it could be like just this shape, and it made me think, okay, so like it's a block. It looks like a Tetris block, so like it belongs to something else where it fits in as a piece. And then she calls it a key, like Wunmi, the lead character played by Toby Omedele, as she calls it a key. And then she has this funny line where she's like, "I'm not a keyhole," which I thought was like hilarious. But then I thought, yeah, it does look like a key, which kind of like fit into my idea that this unidentified object is a part of something. You know, it fits into something like a key. So talk to me about just like conceptualizing what it would look like. You know, the shape that it has. It's not an orb. It's not like a spaceship. It's like this ship
Yeah,
that's pink floating.
it is a
It's
spaceship.
a spaceship, right? Okay,
Yeah, it's a
but not like
spaceship
how
that's
we generally
approaching.
see them in like
Yeah,
film and stuff.
when we decided to work on the ship design, we didn't want to do like a typical spaceship that you would see in different sci-fi movies. I mean, because we have no idea what a spaceship would look like.
Right?
And
Yeah.
we really wanted it to have this looming presence as it was becoming closer and closer to Earth. And so much like any small group that follows things, in the world, nobody really knows what the ship wants or why it's coming. And so the key is just kind of like the name that like people are calling it in slang. But of course it has a double meaning since like Wumi thinks it's like the key to solving her problems. But yeah, we really wanted to have we wanted to have a really monumental figure or shape as the ship, almost like in 2001 A Space Odyssey when they have the cool obelisk. And then also Melancholia was another film reference. I loved in Melancholia how we have the comet that's slowly approaching Earth as this huge disk. And so those were definitely image references I was thinking about coming up with the ship design.
Yeah, and it kind of, and your film actually reminded me of another film that I saw a few years ago at a local film festival here in Toronto, the Toronto Real Asian Film Festival. It's a Korean film called Unidentified, and it's basically about this gigantic, massive orb, a spaceship that just descends over Earth and hangs there. And it's been hanging there for years, and it's never reached out to people. There's no discernible signal. People at first are like, there are people who are like wounding me, you're trying to figure out like how do I connect to this thing? And then there are people that figure out, oh, it's like connecting to certain people through dreams, you know, like people have dreams and it's like, do we have past lives and that kind of stuff? And then there's other people who's like the character that she meets, played by Katie, who's like not really bothered and concerned about it. She's like, it's just there, and like, what am I supposed to do? I mean, I'm not gonna focus on it. So so your film kind of reminded me a lot of that, and it like made me think. And then of course there's like films like Independence Day, where like there's the spaceship just drawing closer and closer, and there are people who are like Wumi, like wants to connect to this and wants to find the answer. And then there are people who are just going about their regular lives. And it kind of made me think how in the concept of we are a lot alone, but with regards to like Earth or like extraterrestrial beings. Like that's how we as human beings are in our general life. There's people who intentionally reach out to people who want to learn about like the people around them. Like one of the reasons I do film criticism, and I do interviews with people like you is because I want to understand and I want to reach out to people within the film community to understand this thing that interests you. And then there's other people that are like, not really interested. And that's kind of like how life is, you know, like it's either people are just interested in connection, and then there are people who really aren't, and that they if they make a connection, so be it, but they don't really strive to do so. So talk to me about your film kind of being about that, about there's the people who want to make a connection, and then there's the people who don't really make it a priority in their lives.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just like any population where there's believers and non-believers, skeptics and non-skeptics. And so we really wanted Lumi and Katie to really represent those two opposites. Because Katie is someone who's I'm sorry, Jenny. I'm thinking of
Right,
the
yeah, the
actress's
character that
real
right, yeah,
name. I'm
the
so
character's
sorry,
name is Katie,
Jenny.
and the actress name is Katie, right?
Jenny is someone who's sort of lived in the world more than Wumi. She's a former like band member, so she's been on tour. So she just has like a more natural cynicism to the world. You know, she's already lost her trust in people, and she's already lost her sense of like the American dream, where she has given up being in a band to just run a business. And Wumi, on the other hand, is I think still a little wide-eyed about the world, and thinks you know, change can still happen. And so it was really great having these two polar opposites in this world, and in this belief system, sort of coming together to find connection with each other.
Yeah, and I think it's also that Wumi is lonely. Like she's an immigrant and she doesn't have anyone around her. Like she's newly moved to this apartment, and she can't really avoid the presence of the object of the key, because like her window is like the wide open. Like there's the blinds aren't covering the window, so like the light is just intensely shining in on her. So like that's the most intense presence that she has in her life. You know, she doesn't have any human connection. So the only thing she has is this gigantic orb, this key floating in the sky, and it's shining directly on her, right? So it makes her feel like, okay, it's reaching out to me. And then she strives to really understand this signal that it's letting out, this kind of like a chant that is and a pulse that is letting out. She memorizes it because this is the only thing she has to focus on, you know, this is the only thing she has to really occupy her time. So when Jenny comes, she's like trying to convince Jenny, it's sending a message to us, you know, it's like trying to connect to us. And it kind of speaks to how people that are lonely aren't necessarily sure how to not be lonely, in that she wants to connect to people, but she's doing it from within her house. You know, she's like sitting at home memorizing the sound and the signal, but she's not going making the active effort to go out to meet people. So Jenny has to come to her. You know, she orders the machine, so like Jenny has to come to her. So I thought that was an interesting thing, where she, in order for her to then finally make the connection, because Jenny came to her, she has to eventually go out to meet Jenny, you know, and I thought that was a really good way to talk about, like I was saying earlier, about making the effort to make connections, you know, like everyone can't keep coming to you. It's a two-way street. Connection is a two-way street. Like one person can't be the giver all the time. Like you have to give and take. So I thought that was a really interesting discussion about communication, because I think the film is also about communication. It's about Wunmi wanted to communicate with the key, but then also having to learn to communicate with Katie, with Jenny, and like basically the key that's floating is the key to her making a connection with someone else.
So myself, I'm a double immigrant. You know, I immigrated from Nigeria to Canada, and then from Canada to the States. And so there's a constant sense of displacement and like trying to fit in and find community constantly. And so I would say Wumi, very much in that same sense, always is feeling a little uneasy and displaced, and it's like it's so hard every time you move somewhere to like figure out who you are and who do you want to talk to. And I think there's a lot of pressure, especially for immigrants, when you move somewhere that's supposed to be the solution to your problems, right? Like, now that I'm here in America or Canada, I'm supposed to be able to achieve my dreams. And so it's very much this idea of like, well, what happens when I've done the thing that everybody back home is thinking about, but it's not what it is, you know?
And you are close to whatever it is, like, you know, once you're in the situation, one really understands how hard it is. Even years down the road, like I've been living here since 2009, and there's still things about living within just the area that I live in that I'm still trying to figure out. You know, I don't know all the restaurants. I lived in the same building and I don't know all of my neighbors. You know, I've only really started interacting with people over the last few years because I got a dog. So like when I have, because you have a dog, like people that, like, you know, come up to you, and I feel more comfortable talking to people. But it can take years and years to really feel like you belong. You know, even though you belong, there's still something that you feel slightly on the outside of, you know, like you still feel slightly off kilter. And I think one of the things about that is because in talking about communication, like you don't have anyone, you don't like You don't really have anyone around you that sounds like you. You know, like Katie is white and she's American and she's not talking with a completely different accent and language structure and everything.
Jenny's actually half Asian, so she's half Asian
Okay.
in the film.
Okay.
But yeah, but so they right. So like a lot of it is, so one of the key things that we wanted to do, I think, in terms of like getting this idea of communication coming across was the fact that we made the chant a duet. And like
Right.
that's the revelation that Wumi has. And so she cannot complete this task or this mission on her own. And so she and Jenny create a new language together, which is like kind of amazing and beautiful. And it's like, yeah, this kind of this pretty song. and so that was our way of like showing the two characters coming together in terms of finding a way to actually communicate or to meet in a new place, being that they're such polar opposites.
Yeah, talk to me about the creation of the chant and the score because the chant and score were created by Jeremiah Chu and Marta Sophia Owner. So talk to me about like coming up with the chant and like because when Wumi says it by herself, it sounds one way. It sounds a lot like breathing and like a lot of like not meditation. It kind of made me think of like but sometimes when a woman is giving birth, they tell her to breathe a certain way. And so it sounds a
So
lot like that. And then, but when Jenny steps in, it changes completely. It sounds more almost, it's a chant, but then it sounds almost like a moaning. Like sometimes when I used to be in choirs and when we were warming it, we'd have to do like certain like sounds within our throat and like it'd be like a lot of and it kind of made me think of almost like Negro spirituals in a way, like how Negro spirituals had like a lot of moaning and groaning. So talk to me about the creation of the chant, especially for going from a singular with just Moonmi to the duet it became with Moonmi and Jenny.
So Wumi's character is a doula, so that's why she starts it off by almost like a breathing exercise. She's figured out in her own practice that when she starts doing certain breathing rhythms, she feels something. And so since I knew that the chant was going to be like the key point of the film, I wanted it to be really good. So I reached out to my friend Jeremiah and Martha, who are like amazing musicians. They do really great experimental, like not jazz, but like experimental soundscapes. And so we wanted the song to be, I'm like so bad with music, which is why I reached out to professionals. I wanted it to, it's like a sort of a singing term where one person sings one line and another person sings the other line,
Like
but
a
when it
harmony, it's like
sings
a actually it's like
together,
a harmony.
and so we wrote the song so that it would work that way. And then I think we also based some of the chant sounds on
Synthesizer.
digital coding, because we wanted to also have like a kind of secret message in the like dots and zeros of the code song. So yeah, we had a lot of help from Jeremiah and Martha, who did such an amazing job on the chant song and some of the musical score in the film. And then sound is so key. So in addition to the chant song, the musical score, we also had a really great sound designer, Paul, who really did some great sound design for the sort of scratching noises.
Right. So talk about the sound design because you have the chant, which works as one is the communication between Woonmi and Katie, and then Woonmi and Jenny, and then Woonmi and Jenny and the spaceship. Like they form that communication and like a triangle form of communication between the three of them. But then there's like I think a visual form of communication with the audience because as they're chanting and as they're getting into the breathing and the rhythm and harmonizing. The etchings on the film start to take distinctive shapes where before it was just like the film had like a just has like this very desaturated look which is kind of like has a lot of the pink because of the light coming from the key but then once they start to chant the etchings change shape And it's that you're giving the audience a visual of what the sounds look like. You know, like for the people who have a condition called kinesthesia, where you can see sounds. And like I kind of as soon as I don't see sounds, but I feel sounds. You know, like sometimes when I hear a particular type of song or music, like I get like physical sensations. And I kind of saw the film as like that, where you're telling the audience this is what this sound looks like. You know, and like the etchings change shape, and some of them even look like vocal cords. What do you imagine the vocal cord looks like if you were to give us like an X-ray of that?
So I had like a very set system for the marking design. So the more scattered and loose the line work is, it's the weaker the connection that Wumi or Katie that or Wumi or Jenny has to the ship. And so when the lines get clearer and make like a very clear pattern, that's when the connection is very strong. And so with that, I wanted to make sure that there was also an audio cue to go along with that. So the sound is rougher and more aggressive when the markings are loose, and then gets a bit more harmonic and musical as the lines get more clear and connected. That was really fun to do.
So talk to me about that process, because it's a very unique way of visual storytelling with the film. And so talk to me about that process and like how long it took you, and then even just from conception of the idea, how you decided, okay, this is what I want the sound to look like and this is how I want it to move. So talk to me about that process.
Yeah, it was a lot of trial and error. I really love film. So the whole film is shot on Ektachrome, which is just beautiful film stock. Shockingly, the film is actually leftover film from Euphoria season two. We found
That would
all the
explain something.
leftover. We found all the leftover film that they didn't use and were able to buy it at a discount. So we shot the film on Ektachrome, and then for the etching, I did it on Blackleader, which is like a really cheap film, like I don't know, it's like film ends that you kind of put at the beginning and end of your film. And so I did a combination of trying different marking patterns frame by frame. The 16 millimeter frame is really small, so you have to be really precise with what you're doing. And then to get the more detailed line work, I wanted to try a new animation technique. So I figured out how to laser etch into the black leader. The hardest part was creating a template to make sure that my registration marks were clear on the frames so that the animation wouldn't look like it's slipping. And so once I had a template, I was able then to make my animation frame by frame, put it through a computer program that then etches it onto the film. And then from there, I get that transferred, and then I can composite the two together. It was a bit of a process, but I really liked doing it.
Yeah, it sounds very complex, especially after having to direct the actual live action film yourself. Like, do this the filming that filming process alone is complex. So to then add that other layer of complexity, you give yourself a real challenge. And I think you did a really good job with it, because the film is very visually interesting and unique. So I know we're gonna wrap up now, but I have one question to ask you, and I'm wondering if the film is a reference to the Nigerian space program, because not a lot of people are aware that Nigeria had a space program that began in the 60s, and then it kind of like faltered through the 70s, 80s, 90s, still kind of like faltering, like they're not sure what's going on. But there's a couple films that reference it, and one is a short film called Afronauts, which I've done live action. I've done like live tweets for a couple of times with my friend that we have a call it sci-fi shorts live tweets, and we did Afronaut. So just like quickly talk about making a night doing a Nigerian reference to like the Nigerian space program, because I was like, ooh, I wonder.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's not a reference to the Nigerian
Okay.
space program, but I am a huge fan of Afronauts. I remember when that came out. It's a beautiful piece of work. I'm just a fan of science fiction in general. But yeah, I've tooled around with trying to make an animation sort of about that, but I haven't quite nailed the story in a way yet. So maybe later on in the future.
Mm.
But yes, yeah, Afronauts is an amazing film. I do love
Did
it.
you ever do like a sci-fi film about like African Nigerian astronauts? I'd be interested to see just what you do visually, like how you'd conceptualize space travel and space life, and that'd be interesting. But thank you so much for speaking with me. I know you have to go, so like I hope you enjoy the rest of the festival and like just enjoy your day. And like I think congratulations on doing something like extremely unique and extremely your own vision.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Thanks. Thank you so much. I am so bye. Have a good day.
Bye.
So everyone, that was my interview with writer and director and animator Adebukola Budren to talk about her live action experimental short film, We Are Not Alone. As we discussed in the film, it's a very visually interesting film. It has a form of etching and animation technique, I guess you could say. I think it would be considered animation technique, where like it gets overlaid over the actual film. And it's just a very, very visually, I think, appealing and arresting film. And like when you're watching, you're like, what's happening? But it really does make sense. And I love how she visualized sound. And I think it's really unique. So I hope a lot of people get a chance to see it. And you can also visit her website to see clips of more of her work and her projects. And I'll link that in the description box below. And it was really interesting to talk to Adebukola, like just get a sense of her idea of like conceptualizing the film. And I think the two lead actresses did a really good job. It's a very short film. It's about 10 minutes long, but like you get a sense of like there's this other world just like out there waiting to be not necessarily discovered but listened to. But then there's also a world here that wants to be listened to as well, and that's why the film is about. The thing is about ultimately about finding human connection and just like listening to your environment and paying attention to your environment. But thank you so much to Buki for talking to me. And thank you so much to everyone who's been listening to the podcast. Of course, the video version of this will be on my YouTube channel, where you can find this and other interviews that I've done with filmmakers from around the world. And that includes directors, writers, animators, producers, costumes, designers, editors, and everything. I consider everyone who works on a film to be a filmmaker. So usually when you hear me say filmmaker, that includes everyone and anyone that I speak to that's involved with the making of a film. You can find a lot of like links to all of my published work, that's written interviews, written film analysis, film reviews, TV reviews, op-eds, and everything linked in my R3 page. That's what I call my digital portfolio. So that's r3.com/Carolyn Hines. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Carrie CNH12. That's CARRIE CNH12. I've been having a great time talking to people this year. I've been talking to people about a whole variety of films. I don't think I've had any interviews for any horror films this year as yet. I'm gonna see if I can fix that. I'd love to talk to a horror filmmaker this year, and maybe write a piece about a horror film. I do have an idea for a piece about actions, so that's something I'm really thinking about doing. But that's just a little update on me. But so until the next episode of Carolyn Talks, everyone, stay safe. Bye.